Mike and Leona gather playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona gather playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the
Greetings, boys and ghouls! Welcome to the RHAP Boo and Boo! I'm your host, Mike Blood!
All right, get out of here, Nick Wilson. Get out. You got a rock star to go practice with. Hey, everybody! Sorry about that distraction. In honor of the Leighton holiday, in true B&B fashion, we are behind on the tread. The real Mike Bloom is here to talk about episode 6 of Survivor, David versus Goliath. Thank you all for staying past that horrendous intro. For those of you that have really made it through the first 30 seconds, we're here to break everything down. We got a really exciting panel here. Let me first introduce our spring-loaded killing machine, Leona Boris. Leona, how are you?
I was going to say we better do a better job on this podcast than the jabronis did on that immunity challenge. But I think with the intro, we've already lost that. So, okay, that's fine. We can dump as much water as we want. The well's already dropped.
Yeah, I was going to say the liquid are listeners. And I think we just, yeah. I was the Mike White. I just dropped it completely and it's still there. Jeff Probst is freaking out. But we are so happy, no matter who might be listening, to be joined by this guy. If you are an international Survivor listener, he is no stranger to you. You have heard him talk endlessly doing this fantastic coverage of Australian Survivor champions versus contenders. We just spent the past few minutes feeding vegetables to each other over our respective microphones. Nick Iadanza, welcome back to the B&B. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, guys. And if you weren't hemorrhaging listeners with that introduction, you're definitely going to be hemorrhaging listeners because people have to be listening to my voice again after a very long and winding Australian Survivor season. So apologies for all of you out there who have to hear my voice again, but I'm so excited to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Well, Nick, I guess we could just like cut straight to it because you had a really interesting sort of jog, across the sea, basically, from covering Australian Survivor to, you know, I think Australian Survivor ended concurrently with the David versus Goliath season going on. So sort of what was your transition from Australian Survivor back into the American version? And now that we have sort of have officially ended the pre-merge structure of this season, what have your thoughts been on it so far?
It's funny because like the second US Survivor season of the year, I'm always so like hesitant to get involved with because I just feel like I've gone through this like months and months of Australian Survivor that just goes way too long and way too much Survivor. And I just like binge out like all these Halloween kids just like binging out on way too much candy. And then American Survivor starts and I just like need to take a break because, you know, Heroes versus Heelless Hustlers, I didn't listen to that. I didn't start that until I about 5 or 6 weeks and I binged it. But I got started on this. I watched the first episode and I was hooked. So like the usual curse of Australian Survivor, like keeping me away, did not keep me away because this has been really, really, really fun. It's so fun. Perfect for this podcast.
Actually, that should be the new metric of how good a season is. Like screw ranking, screw whatever it is that people want to use. Like, well, Nick happily watch this season after having to sit through all of Australian Survivor. That really is the true metric.
Exactly right. No, it's so good. I am loving it. Like the absurdity of some of these like votes and of some of the topics that have been brought up and like, you know, Jacket Gate and everything is just, that's why I love Survivor because it's, you can never predict what is going to be the topic, you know, when you throw people together, like, yeah, okay, there's always blind sides alliances, but it's these random stupid things which just make my heart sing.
Well, Leona, what did you think about this most recent episode? I know that I put out the call on Twitter to rank the pre-merge episodes, and I know that ranking can be arbitrary and reductive according to other RHAP podcasters, but I figured, you know, why not? And I would say that for me, at least, this was still a good episode. There are a lot of positives that I want to talk through. It did end up sort of 6 out of 6 by default, just because the other 5 before it were so much fun. And while there were fun moments, I mean, it's always going to be tough to come off the high that was Jacket Gate. And so it was always going to be a tough act to follow. But I felt like this was pretty straightforward in comparison to some of the other episodes, which I would say maybe had some higher highs. What do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think that's interesting because from Natalie's boot, which was, if I had to, gun to my head, rank them, which I'm not saying I would, but if I had to, Natalie, that boo would have to be number one. So, of course, you're going to have a little bit of a drop off afterwards. But I think what I really appreciated about this episode was the fact that going into the immunity challenge, I honestly had no idea who was going to go to tribal council, because we got to see a little snippet of the dynamics and setting up a potential boot on every single tribe. And just from an editing perspective, that was something that I really appreciated. Once it turned out that the Purple Tribe was going to go, then it was a little bit more clear, I think. Although for me, I was still questioning. I think Rob is the one who talked about this, whether or not Mike was going to pull himself from the game. I had that for a split second. But then I think, you know, it sort of became a little bit more clear to me that Lyrsa was going to be the boot on that episode.
Interesting, because I was not so clear on the outcome. I personally thought it was Angelina, but I think what really
you were Angelining.
Yeah, I was Angelining and not so clear on the outcome. Oh man, I love this. I love this so much. But the thing that really did it for me was my favorite part of the episode, honestly, was this post immunity challenge pre tribal council stretch, because, you know, I feel like, Nick, you sort of talked about this with the international seasons this year, how, unfortunately, I think due to the American game structure nowadays, we're sort of deprived of what it's like to have like four or three people left in the game and how they sort of figure out the machinations of voting for each other. It's very rare that we still get that in American version, but because that this Djibeni tribe was down to only four people, we got some really interesting combinations of people. I know it's been mentioned before, but that scene where you have, you know, Mike talking to Lyrsa in the water while a stone's throw away, you have Nick talking with Angelina. I thought it was just a really nice counterpoint. And really, I thought it was going to be Angelina going, just because you had Mike going back and forth about these things. But I thought actually the most gripping part for me was just, as Jeff said in the immunity challenge, sometimes in Survivor, you have nowhere to hide. And it seemed like one of Lyrsa's issues, unfortunately, is that there was nowhere to hide. There were only four people.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was Angelina going home. Like, I was so sold on that, and I was like really surprised. I was like, wow, as if we're losing Angelina and Natalie before the merged portion of it. And I was like totally ready for like Lyrsa to be around for like so much longer, and because she was just going to slide through. So I was really surprised, and I'm not down on this episode comparative to the other ones. I actually really enjoyed this, maybe because I knew I got to come on and talk to you guys about it. But like, I absolutely loved it. I loved them in the water talking to each other. I love when it's like four people and it was just like, you know, two people go off and the other two, and then the pairs switch, and then those two people go off. You know, I was the smallest tribe I was on was a tribe of five, and it's very, very weird strategizing on a tribe of five people. And I can only imagine how weird it would be strategizing a tribe of four people. So I was all in on this episode.
Yeah. Is strategizing with that small number of people, it's sort of like a key party where like everyone's like, oh, I picked yours out. I guess it's our turn to sort of have a conference, and everyone else can sort of hang around and do whatever they like.
What's a key party?
Yeah. You get to throw all your coconut keys in a bowl and then you pick it.
That's what Barry's hat was for, right?
We don't talk about Barry anymore. No, we don't talk about him. It's easier on a tribe, a small tribe. It's just really weird because like you're so sketched out. You're a real sketchball, as Nick would say. You know, you always think that at any moment someone's going to like pop out of the bushes. But like when there's four or five people, there really aren't. Like, you know, you can clock where everyone is and keep track of them pretty easily. And it just makes it so much more fun being out there, knowing that you actually can have those conversations and it's not going to be like shut down at a moment's notice.
Well, yeah, because literally at the beach, the two pairs could see each other. Like, we could see them in the background of the other pair having the conversation. Like, it's very clear who's talking to who when you only have four people on a tribe.
And you'd have to assume that there's some sort of level of understanding as well, because these are also four people who are pretty big fans to a certain extent, even though Angelina is a recovering bachelor addict. I think that there is a certain like nod between everybody to be like, all right, we're going to go strategize, because it does seem like this was a group that, and Lyrsa maybe said a bit differently in my exit interview with her, that she wasn't necessarily going to be Djibeni strong. But I think they all at least had some dedication to each other, that this really did feel like, you know, a heartbreak loss. I mean, Mike White, the guy who was talking about like slitting throats, Mr. Reality TV veteran, was besides himself after the challenge about actually getting rid of someone, which was another interesting sort of element as well. I think this is Josh maybe talking about this on the Wiggle Room this week, about how this season is really playing up, I guess, the human element in addition to the strategic element. But I feel like we are pushing the human element even more than we did in previous seasons. And we see it here yet again when we get to see not necessarily the emotional ramifications of playing Survivor, but the emotional ramifications of voting somebody out, which we get sometimes. We got that during the Stephanie Johnson boot in Ghost Island. But otherwise, I feel like in modern Survivor, it's a general understanding that that's how the game is played, that it's rarely talked about on screen. So I'm always grateful when we really tap into that emotional qualities. Even if some alumni are saying, Crybaby Island Part 2, I personally enjoy it.
I think actually that's interesting because when I'm thinking about the three sort of scenes that we saw before the immunity challenge, where Elizabeth, her sort of freak out was sort of sold to us as this strategy sort of thing. Like it could be, oh my God, are they all going to team up against Elizabeth? But it really was an emotional thing. It was like her, oh my gosh. And can we just talk about her faces?
Her dinosaur faces.
So good. I don't do well with lazy people. Dramatic sniff.
Yes.
And stupid people, which is so good. And I love having that in there, but then it's still put in terms of strategy. So I feel like I'm getting both. And that's what I really appreciate about this season, that I feel like it does that. It really can mix the two together really well.
Yeah, I actually
went. Do you know what it reminded me of when she was making those faces? Like when I used to teach the movie Black Swan. When at the point where the white swan is transforming into the black swan, she's making these really weird body movements and knees are bending backwards. Like I was expecting Elizabeth's skin to just tear apart and this thing would burst out. And that was her trying to just keep it in, keep it in, keep it in.
I want to stop down for a second. You teach the movie Black Swan.
Yeah, I'm at a very liberal school.
I was going to say, they get into some pretty lascivious stuff there. I mean, it's even a little bad for me, and I'm nearing 30 years of age, and I'm specifically when she's ripping her skin off, I'm I don't know if I have the 15-year-olds are really getting behind Darren Aronofsky.
They definitely got behind that one scene, let me tell you.
Wait, I'm sorry. I want to go back to this concept of Elizabeth being a lizard person and coming out from behind the mask with her crazy eyes.
Elizabeth!
It was right there. We didn't even know it the entire time. I can imagine she gets the final tribal council and she's like, well, y'all, I can't believe I made it. So now I must finally reveal who I truly am. My name is Glackdor of the lizard people.
Oh my God, I knew it. Yes. And then I would be like, now does Elizabeth winning the game ruin the game for the rest of the lizard people? Yeah. Can another lizard person be taken to the end and win?
This is the new thing. This is like the new Jeremy revealing that he's having a baby. Like, forget that. Like, reveal you are a lizard at the final tribal. Yeah. And that is how you win.
Elizabeth, 37 out of 37 in terms of winner ranking. She only won because she revealed she was a lizard person at the end.
Really have to discount her win because of that. Come on.
Well, it literally took us a few minutes post vampire to get into the insanity that is Elizabeth is a lizard person conspiracy theories. But let's start getting.
This has to be a record. 10 minutes in, and we've.
let's start getting into our usual fare here. Let's go back to Lyrsa and let's talk about how we thought Liana and I thought Lyrsa would do preseason. Now Lyrsa, I think the general reception behind her was, ooh, quirky, fun character, sometimes doesn't do well in Survivor. Indeed, every tribal council she went to, she was targeted. She was the cat with three lives that expended them all. But Liana, what was your personal take on how Lyrsa would do preseason?
Okay, so I did have Lyrsa going pre-jury, and this is what I wrote. So Lyrsa is here to play the game, and while her daring gameplay is exciting, it ultimately leads to her downfall. She found herself in a tight alliance early, and she loyal until the pencil vote. She turned on her allies. The now iconic pencil vote causes her alliance to call her a can of dirty backstab and vote her out of the game. Lyrsa leaves the game with a positive attitude and returns to kickboxing undergrads at Ponderosa.
Oh, boy. I don't want to. All right, you 19-year-olds, come in. You know you wanted an internship, but this girl's going to take out her anger at her tribe members by kicking you in the face.
Yeah, so because
your predictions just get more and more oddly specific. It's like, this is not how you win, guys.
This is the AI. This isn't me, okay?
Well, I want to focus for a second. Like, can we speculate what this pencil vote could be, or is there a pencil vote that we just haven't given a connotation to yet?
That's true. Like, what was the pencil vote? But I don't know. The AI said she's loyal until the pencil vote. So obviously this had to have happened. The AI can't be wrong. So when did she turn on somebody? Was it Jessica? I guess she was trying to save herself, though.
I have no idea how to make sense of it.
She wrote her answer with a bird. I mean, you know, do they write with pencils? They're like little charcoal. Like,
I mean, if they went with pencils, I think Aubrey would have done a much better job in Co Wrong. So I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Yeah,
it's not a pencil. It's like a Sharpie that they like wrap wood around. So
try to make it look like it's a piece of pulled out of the fire. Driftwood, right. It's like, I have no idea. But apparently I also wrote that her closest ally was B. Probably because she was kickboxing undergrad, so total swing and a miss on that one. Oh, and worst enemy, Elizabeth, or Elizardbeth, if you will. So really knocked it out of the park here.
Well, I don't know.
That's great.
We'll see how it compares, because I had Lyrsa making the jury. I was one vote off. So close. I said that Lyrsa's shirt will somehow stay pretty pristine throughout her time in the game. She came in with like a pretty white Hawaiian-esque shirt. It's not as grandiose as Alec Merlino's, but it's still something to be commented on. I said Jeff will call her out in at least one swimming challenge. I said she and John Hennigan will get along, prompting a funny picture when it comes to size comparison. And to her dad's consternation, she will get blurred at least once. Because I think her dad, if you remember, thought she was going to go on Naked and Afraid. I also said her closest ally would be B. I think it really is that kickboxing connection that just never came to fruition. And I said her worst enemy would be Jessica.
Oh, okay. Huh. Well, that was close. Okay. Well, when you first said blurred, I thought of Davey because he calls himself the blurred. And I was like, it took me way too long to finally figure out what you were talking about. I was like, I don't know.
It gives a new definition to blurred lines.
Don't call Robin thick on this one.
I'm waiting for a wand off to happen now in the next few weeks called blurred lines about if Davey's
a good one.
If Davey's throwing out fishing lines or like throwing out pickup lines to people, I feel like blurred lines has to be a thing.
Yeah, blurred lines.
If someone gets on now and wins with that, like, you need to get credit because that's a really, really good idea.
I'll take the brim of the wombat hat. That's my compensation. That's like my 10%. All right, Nick. So you got slim pickings here. But which pick will have the other person saying, excuse me?
Well, I was going to say, after hearing Liana's, I was like, well, there's no way she's winning. But but I got to say, I'm Angelining more towards Liana. I think that you definitely, I don't know. I feel like the fact that you had her going, Mike, that you had her going to the jury just kind of really threw me, because I never would have predicted that for her until maybe like I saw that she was getting this close. So I'm going to give it to Leon.
Hooray.
Yeah, I feel like maybe this is sort of like, I guess, the meta of how we approach these things, at least from my perspective. There are, I would say, at least three or four people where people are like, nope, they're never going to make it. And I would say at least one of them always is able to slip through. Somehow, like last season, I think you could say like Angela is a good example where I think she might have come up a bit stern in the preseason where people were like, oh, God, no, she's first gone. And, you know, you sort of like learn your Lauren Rimmer was a good example, too, from 35. We're like, I feel like there is one exception to the rule. Only one slot of like a preseason doomed person is able to squeak their way onto the jury. And I hopes that it would be Lyrsa. I will not reveal who my other preseason pre-jury boots were, but at least one of them made their way onto the jury as a result.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who like that's left is like an obvious target. The only person I can maybe think of is like Gabby, but even that, like I could see a world where she makes it further. I'm really enjoying the people they've chosen the cast this year. I think this season, so like, I'm genuinely interested in all of them. And my winner pick was Jeremy. And like, you know, that's probably the worst I've ever done. So it's actually like the fact that I don't even care that he's gone because there's so many other interesting people. It's very good for the season. It's very good.
Well, and I think that that's also what makes it entertaining for me, is just having people that I genuinely care about. Like, I care about who goes home, you know, and that just naturally, you know, makes you more invested in the season.
Do you think, just quick question, do you think there's any chance that Natalie Cole gets invited back for another season?
Well,
she was one of Jeff Probst's players to watch.
I would say there's a difference between Natalie Cole getting asked back and Natalie Cole deciding to go back. Because I think that, you know, from her approach in my exit interview with her, she was a bit skewing towards the Foley angle of, I'm a little angry that I was edited in this particular way. And it seems like Natalie also is sort of like, my life is fine. You know, I don't know if she necessarily feels like she needs to go back, feels like she has unfinished business in any perspective. So I think it really depends on how she feels about her depiction, and whether or not she wants to, maybe that serves as a chance for her to redeem herself and say, I want to show I'm a different type of person, the Jerry Manthe style of doing it. Or it might just her, to quote another Goliath, saying F it and say, you know what, I think I'm good with just one and done for Survivor.
I could see her being someone chosen for like a second chance poll. Like, that's where I can see her.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes sense, that she would be somebody who would be considered. I think what would be interesting to know, though, is because she had such a positive fan reaction, but it seemed like she didn't really know that. Or that was how it felt in a lot of her exit press. So I wonder if, sort of as time goes on, maybe she'll realize that people really, really enjoyed her on the show and would want her back. And maybe that would help. If, you know, Mike, your prediction is true that she maybe
my predictions are not true at this rate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess I'll run it through the AI and we'll see what we get.
Yeah.
I think, honestly,
it's all about, she needs to embrace the memes. And I think she has to a certain extent, but like, Angelina, I thought, did a fantastic job embracing the memes to the point where, like, she actually turned into charitable work. I don't know if you guys saw this last week, but she's like, hey, you know, for those of you that were tweeting me to give me a jacket, you can go to Goodwill and actually donate a jacket if you want to use it. Send me a picture of it and I'll send you something. I think that's like, I do like that Goodwill can actually be born out of the memes. It's very rare on Survivor, but I kind of feel like, especially nowadays, Natalie needs to embrace the Gen Z population of it all and just buy into all the fantastic memes that have come out of the reign of Queen Natalie.
But I feel like it's a lot easier for people to embrace the memes who have made the merge than the people, the pre-merge people.
Who's memeable?
I just feel like in my personal experience with Survivor, the people that don't, like, they have a really tough time, like, with the aftermath and really kind of like separating the positive from the kind of the silly and the negative and stuff.
Nick, we, as per usual, we have each bringing a discussion question about the episode, the season, Survivor in general, to throw around the panel. What goodies have you brought in your, after the fact trick or treat basket for us this episode?
Okay. So, you know, I thought this episode like was interesting in terms of, you watch the two challenges and you listen to Jeff's commentary. And I feel like Jeff is just like getting so shady. Like he loves, like, you know, really hacking into the tribes out there. You know, at one point he was saying, you know, it looks like there are two tribes who know how to play Survivor and one tribe who doesn't even know how to begin. Like, he's like, okay, like, Survivor is one thing, like carrying a giant disc full of water is another. So he's really reaming in on them. And then he talks about, he goes, oh, their heart's not in it, but their heart's in it, but then they just can't get the performance to match. And then he even said, like, day 17, a day none of them will ever forget, a day that will live in infamy.
Yeah, don't make this the Pearl Harbor of the Jebedee tribe, Jeff.
Yes. So it got me thinking, like, you know, Jonathan was vocal during our season, but like he was still trying to find his feet, so he wasn't vocal. So I don't have too much experience with a host, you know, throwing kind of, you know, shade while you're competing. And it made me think, what would be the most demoralizing thing to hear during a challenge by the host?
Oh my gosh. Well, that actually reminds me of when Natalie was blindfolded during that one challenge. And Jeff was like, you know, it's not going well or something like that. Like, I can't imagine being blindfolded, not being able to see what you're doing and having the host berate you for doing something wrong. Like, you can't even fix it because you can't even see what's happening. Like, that must be terrifying.
I love Jeff during this challenge because it was very like the Smeagol and Gollum parts of his producer persona. Where it was like, oh, we hate Jebenny. We want Jebenny to lose. Like, oh, but Jebenny has so much heart. We loves the Jebenny. They perfect Davids and Goliaths. So, like, you can see a man torn in that moment as to, like, what's going to make for the best TV moment. And he started real sour, but they came around to sweep in, like, look at them. They're not giving up. Even when they literally gave up, they haven't given up yet.
It kind of felt like to me that he was like, all right, I'll just like take both approaches and then they can just pick whichever one in the editing bay they want to go with. Like they can trim out my mean comments.
Yeah. Like the actor, like, okay, I'll give two different takes. Use whichever one you want to. And then he's a consummate professional at this point. So I guess maybe does he do that for other challenges and they just don't show it?
But that memo never made it to the editing bay and they just like threw it all in there. Now it just looks like it's just like got this complete Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde moment of watching this challenge.
Although I was really waiting for something of the David versus Goliath theme. Like, I don't know. Even though they kept going, even though it took them four times, kept spilling water, much like David spilled water or something. Because I'm not sure that like Jeff really understands the David Goliath story. That would have been great.
So to answer your question, I mean, I'm not going to try to check too much into like my therapy conversations to think about what's the most demoralizing thing that someone could say to somebody. I don't know. I mean, I guess what do you think strikes most at a Survivor player and makes them feel the worst? Like, could he compare them against other players, like previous players? Could he be like, you're doing worse than Missy with a broken leg from San Juan del Sur? Like, are we going in that direction?
It could be. I feel like, definitely what people out there are worried about is that their like edit is worse than the other person or that they're going to get shown in a more negative light. They could be like, wow, like this person is really, you know, Mike is really, really struggling to do something. Liana would never struggle with carrying that disc.
I think my favorite ones are when he's really close to them physically. Like he's not just giving commentary from far away when he's like right next to them when they're doing the puzzle. I think that because then it's like drill sergeant sort of yelling in your face while you're trying to do it. Like I can't imagine the added pressure of him being physically close to you would also be so intense.
All right. I got it. I think I found the perfect solution. How do we feel about Jeff Probst doing Yo Mama jokes?
Oh my god, I can see that with Penner, of course.
What have you? I'm sure you've got one.
Your mama's so big, we have to dig deep twice as much to get her in the sand.
Yeah, anything about people's family, like, whoa, your family going to be so disappointed in you.
What is the joking? So we're just coming off of Halloween. So we're talking about people's fears of clowns or spiders or whatever. But really, like being ashamed and really being shamed in front of your family. Like, what is it that Tyson always says? It's public shaming. So that's what Jeff has to do. Publicly shame them.
So maybe
someone trying to cross a bridge and it's like, oh, I will not want to be you in a couple of months watching this back with your children.
Imagine how embarrassed your family will be.
Hope your wife is getting another apartment to live in. you better watch any close male friends you have. I think that like maybe what Jeff can do is, you know, when you ask family members like, okay, do you want to be this person's loved one? Say, okay, what I want you to do is send in a video reaction. One really happy, like Jeff does in the challenges. Give me two takes. One really happy, one very disappointed and angry. And maybe what he does is he gets out one of these cheapo depot phones that they pimped out on previous seasons, like the Sprint Palm Pre. And they're like, Elizabeth, here's your daughter, very saddened in your performance in this challenge. How does this make you feel?
Well, what's going on? What would be great is then you bring it full circle when the family visit happens and be like, so, and we have, Jessica's sister coming on out. Jessica, Jessica's sister, you would not believe how bad Jessica did in this immunity challenge. Terrible.
Let's go to the tape.
Yeah. Although I guess he kind of did that with Colby and Reed, didn't he? Didn't he say something to Reed about like he's been like this the whole time?
Yes.
Not just because
I just feel like there's so many things that he could like there's so many ways that you can just demoralize people out there, and people are already just at their lowest. Like Jeff, like we don't need you as well.
Oh my god, what would Elizabeth have done if like Vuku lost that reward challenge if Jeff was demeaning them while it was going on? Like I can't, Elizabeth would bite his freaking head off.
Is that what lizards do?
She would have ran off into the bush, got into a little like spaceship and like flown away to like the planet Galactor.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I don't know, it seems like if her Galactor's mission is to eliminate humans or study their behaviors, she might have accomplished the former, because it seemed like, let's get too tangential with the Elizabeth stuff, there was one point when she nearly threw Carl into the fire with her gargantuan bamboo stick she was dragging back. Did you guys see that?
Oh, it was so good. It was so passive aggressive. It was like, I'm trying to build the shelter and take this bamboo. And she just like slowly shoves him in the fire. And he's like trying to dodge it as it sort of knocks him from the knees. Oh, it was iconic.
I love that. And like, if Elizabeth is listening to this, which I don't know if she is, I absolutely love Elizabeth. She is the best. And I am so on the Elizabeth train. But I got to say, watching that shelter thing, like, I want to weigh in, like, as a player, someone who's played, I want to weigh in about these shelters, okay? Okay. When you go out there, ready? I've been preparing this because it just cheeses me up. When you go out there, in terms of making a shelter, you think you need to make a shelter because you've watched Survivor. You know that that's just what you do in the first episode, the first couple of days. It's something that the whole team can get behind. You don't need to make a shelter with a bottom. You just need to make a shelter with a top. On the first 12 days of my season, we slept on these logs and this awful, like really super uncomfortable shelter. And it wasn't until I was sent to the other tribe that we were just like, hell no. And we just slept on the floor, and it's freezing on the floor. But you can get around that by stuffing so many palm leaves and just sleeping on top of that. And I think the thing that, you know, people just do it because they think they have to. When you watch the first episode of like Heroes versus Villains, the villains aren't wasting time making a shelter because A, they don't care about like, you know, looking like we got together and made this shelter, and they know that you don't need it. So it's just like, just make a roof and just sleep on the floor. Save your back, save the time, save the potential of accidentally pushing your tribe mate in the fire with one of the beams, and just sleep on the floor, people. Word to the wise.
So
doesn't it get, but the ground gets cold. You're just saying you just deal with it with the palm, like the
palm.
Yeah.
So you just like, okay. You just keep ripping off all leaves, palm leaves, you know, bushes, just everything. And you like lay it on the sand and then you sleep on top of those. And it makes like a really cushiony, comfy bed. I had like so many great sleeps out there once I slept on the floor.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
So yeah. Like the villains were, Nick, were like, I don't know, you and Craig doing the seesaw like Coach and Russell were doing rather than building the shelter.
Yes, we definitely tried that. It did not work.
Because you're not a true villain.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to go share what villains are.
I thought with the other thing with the Elizabeth moment is that like she could have had like that, you know, admission that she had this, you know, back thing and that she was really sore. That could have been a moment that she used in a way to kind of get people on her side. And it could have been like a really touching moment that was unifying. But it just kind of felt like because she kind of like bottled it up for so long, it just kind of exploded out and it became a really negative thing. And then people aren't going to come on your side and be like, oh, like, wow, like she's got a sore back. All right, I understand. They're going to be like, great, you've got a sore back. I got a sore back too. Like, you know, because you're fighting with them. So sometimes it's better just to kind of like be honest and let that, like, don't let it simmer away for too long. And definitely do not start taking the shelter apart on your own. That is a bad, bad move.
Well, so I guess my question is, so it's not the Elizabeth's problem that she did this. It was sort of the approach to it that she sort of just let it sort of exclaim out all at once rather than just sort of admit over time, like, hey, my back's been killing me. Maybe it was she wanted to get far away from the Pat incident to bring up the back stuff because that's just too traumatizing. The other interesting thing that I felt from this edit is that we were only really getting reactions from the other two Davids on the tribe. I don't know if that was to sort of put forward this narrative of, oh, the Davids might turn on Elizabeth, even though they have a majority. Yeah. But it is interesting to me that, like, we heard nary a word from Kara nor Alec about, you know, their reactions to Elizabeth's shenanigans with the bamboo.
Well, no one knows what Alec was doing, but definitely Kara was just so happy. Like, we saw her confessional. She was just like, I'm going to stay quiet because they're fighting. So I think that's probably why you can see her in the background, but she's just like not saying a word and just staying very quiet. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was from, are the Davids going to turn on each other perspective? But she seemed happy about the whole thing.
As you would be. Yeah.
I can't tell if Kara is the luckiest or the unluckiest person on Survivor, because she was the person who was dead center when Jeremy and Natalie were going at it on that sandy hill. Then she's front and center again when Elizabeth and Davey are going back and forth, where she's like, I'm not a wacko. And he's like, I didn't say you were a wacko. This is a half day job, etc. So Kara has unintentionally become like the front row audience member to all of these wrestling matches. Ironically enough, none of which feature the actual wrestler on the show.
That's exactly what you want to be. You want to be the witness. You don't want to be in the middle of it. And I wish I had learned that.
Well, speaking of the wrestler, let's move on to our first game here. In honor of the triumvirate that has come to light over the past few episodes from the Teva tribe, this is going to be a game called Know Your Bro Chacho. And here's how it works. The great Shut Up Tim and I have trolled the social medias of the members of the Bro Chachos. What I'm going to do is I'm going to provide the wording of a social media post. You are going to buzz in and say which of the Bro Chachos said that quote. So if you get it right, okay, you get a point. If you get it wrong, you don't get a point. Tim has suggested for your buzzers, Liana say bro Anna, and Nick say either Nick bro or brick. So I guess pick your poison there.
I will take brick for 100 points. Thank you.
All right. So I will read a quote. It's up for grabs. Whoever wants to buzz in first and guess. If you get it right, you get a point. Wrong, you get 0 points. And all the answers are going to be the name of a bro chacho. Before we get into this, Nick, do you have any opinions about the bro chachos that have come to prominence over the past few episodes?
I love the dynamic between John and Christian. Dan, like, we could do without Dan. Is that mean?
No, I think that that's fair. I will say the one funny thing about Dan was I think it's when Allison and Gabby were talking, and then it was like cut to Dan with just this like big stick, just like smacking it against a tree, doing absolutely nothing. I was like, what is this? What is the purpose of this? That made me laugh, but like him.
Well, but then it was interesting because he's, yeah, smacking this caveman-esque log against the tribe flagpole, and then cut to Christian, who's like breaking a little twig over his knee. It's just a fantastic, we're talking about literally David versus Goliath. And I will say, I liked the feeding each other scene because it might be the most homoerotic thing I've seen on Survivor in quite some time. And I think that John and Christian realized that as well, because, you know, as soon as one person said, as soon as they both realized that it was the first time they were, you know, they'd ever fed someone or been fed, they immediately like start blushing and talking at the same time, kind of sort of like stumbling over each other's words.
Yeah.
It's so cute. It's so cute. Also, I don't know if you guys caught this conversation, but it was John saying what makes dancing cool is misdirection.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like, he's comparing dance to magic.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, I'm pretty sure this is magic, not dancing. And then what was the example that he used?
The moonwalk.
Yes, that's why dancing is cool. The moonwalk is cool because it's misdirection. You think you're going, oh my God, he's going backwards.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know if I'm like just, I guess by this logic, A, John thinks that David Blaine is the best dancer of all time, or B, he thinks Michael Jackson was an amazing magician that just nobody knew about.
I'm trying to imagine someone like watching that and going, all right, that's what I need to do tonight in the club. And then they go out and they're like dancing. And I just like throw a glass at the wall. So everyone's looking at the smash.
Misdirection.
Like, hey guys, misdirection.
And then just like, you're just dancing. Like I imagine like dancing with somebody at the club and all of a sudden you reach behind their ear and pull out, you're like a nickel. Like out of your sleeves, those tissues that just like keep going. You're like, yeah, I'm going to win this dance off.
Start doing the Macarena and then at the end, like doves fly out of your jacket.
Yeah.
I think we've stumbled upon something here. You know, I think that put on your Mike White fedora and hit the club with a rabbit in your hat, and I think you're ready to take on the town. All right. Well,
okay, this is good.
Yeah, we took a big misdirection before we actually got to the game, so let's dance our way back.
You
here.
You all thought it was about a game, but really, it's about dancing.
All right. So let's start off here again. Buzz in when you think you have the answer. We'll start off with some pretty easy ones, some layups, if you will. These are the Teva-esque answers. My one hashtag SciComm wish. Teach everyone the importance of models in science, e.g. model
organ. Brana.
Yes, Liana.
Christian.
That is correct. The full one. My one hashtag SciComm wish. Teach everyone the importance of models in science, e.g. model organisms and model problems. Wouldn't it be so easy to smear fruit fly research and laundry folding robots?
I thought when you said model, we were talking about Dan, and then I got distracted. Ah, okay. My bad. Good. Well done, Liana.
All right,
Broana.
Let's see. Moving on to question number two. If I keep finding idols, I'm not going to have any room in my pants.
Yeah, Brittany, brick.
All right, going to brick.
Damn.
That is correct. The full tweet. If I keep finding idols, I'm not going to have any room in my pants for the other quote unquote idol.
Okay. Wait, but I'm trying to figure out. That means he can fit two down there. And there's still room. I don't know. I feel like that's like a bat. Is it like an insult? He like insulted himself, I feel like, in some way.
Oh, God.
All right. Next one here. Next week, smiley face on at Impact Wrestling.
Brianna.
Liana.
John.
That's correct. Next week, smiley face on Impact Wrestling. I defend the title against a sociopath at Real Killer Cross. Scary when someone uses their intelligence to excuse decisions that they are smart enough to understand are morally wrong. Probably scarier for the sociopath, though, when my foot kicks his face. Glasses emoji.
So is he fighting Christian?
I was going to say.
I don't know.
Is this a Survivor? Is this about next week on Survivor? Yeah. He should just narrate next time on Survivor with this.
I mean, I don't know really who at Real Killer Cross is.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, right. I don't know either.
Next up, Liana is ahead 2-2-1. Live from the flight deck. If it isn't an
Brick.
Nick.
I have no idea. I just wanted.
You just wanted to say the word brick.
Yeah. Christian.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Leon, I'll give you a chance to steal here because Nick buzzed in prematurely. Live from the flight deck. If it isn't an F-14 Tomcat, but it's still pretty shit hot. See you topside. Six is clear.
Dan.
I'm sorry, the correct answer is Terry Dietz, the original Brochacho.
Oh! Cheater!
It's all about misdirection!
Jordan Kalen's bullshit! What is this?
Listen, I said know your Brochachos. I didn't say the Brochachos were going to be from this season. So yes, Terry Dietz has joined the fray.
Okay, well, I thought that was funny. I was like, oh, ha, that's funny, because Terry Dietz. Okay, wait, so is Joe Anglim an option then?
It can be.
Oh, okay.
All right. That was a bit of a goose egg, but let's move on to the next one and see if you have luck. Liana is ahead 2-1 over Brick. Sometimes you just need to dive in and get a little wet.
Brick. Dan.
That is correct. For a man you really don't like, you really have his tweets pegged.
Well, I do follow him on Twitter. I haven't seen any of his tweets from this week because I've been pretty lazy. But I do know that he loves a photo of him like in the shower or like in his underwear or, you know, shirtless pics. And I assume that that's one of him like dousing himself in a hose with like a sunset and a dog behind it.
That's correct.
What?
No dog, but it is him and a woman sort of like notebook style, like embracing each other while they are sopping wet. So I think Dan was actually the most adept out of all these people for all the cyclones, because like that's just his usual photo shoot weather.
Yeah, sorry, I'm busy checking his Twitter. not for cheating in the game, just other reasons.
All right, let's move on. Let's see if Liana's distracted enough for this next tweet. Bro, parentheses, Alex uses bro like Smurfs use Smurf.
Brana?
Yep, Liana.
John.
That is correct.
Alex.
Alex? Did he say Alex?
No, he said I pulled a Natalie and I accidentally called him Alex. It's such similar sounds. They're right there on the tip of the tongue next to each other.
Alex uses
Smurf. Okay.
Wait, can you say it again?
Alex uses bro like Smurfs use Smurf.
Okay.
Nice.
All right, let's move on to this next one. Posted without comment, and it's a link to William Shatner's performance of Elton John's Rocket Man.
Break.
Les Nick.
Christian?
Yeah, that is correct.
Yes. Oh, God.
Yes.
Surely the robot science kind of rocket. No,
I don't know. Because I feel like Christian honestly talks a bit like William Shatner. So I wouldn't be surprised if he based his confessionals off of Shatner's performance of Rocket Man.
Oh, man. Okay, so I actually had this random thought when I was watching the episode, because I was watching the way that Christian moves and sort of the way he speaks, I feel like mimics the way he moves. And he moves in such an interesting way, but he designs robots. Like, he does biomechanics for robots. I was like, how? Maybe he moves like his robots, or maybe he's designing his robots wrong, because I was like, you don't
unless
move like a normal person.
He is a robot.
He is a robot. Oh, God.
I was gonna say-
Oh, my God. I can't wait for Final Tribal Council. Here's what's going to happen. It's Elizabeth and Nick and Christian there. And Elizabeth says, I am Galactor, a lizard person. And Christian says, I can do one better. My name is Christian Bot 4000. I am the first android to play Survivor. And then Nick says, I'm a vampire. And so, like, you really have to choose who's the lesser of three evils out of all those.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go for lizard bot. No, wait. That would not lizard bot. The lizard. Lizard bot would be. That's how you beat a lizard and a bot in the final trouble. The third person has to be lizard bot.
This is like some really weird version of rock, paper, scissors, like vampire versus robot versus lizard person.
Well, the vampire can't bite the lizard, but the lizard can't defeat the robot. It's a work in progress. We'll be playing it next week, I'm sure. All right, let's move on here. We're all tied up as we move into these last bunch of questions. My thoughts on my game hence far and hashtag tribe Tiva at Survivor CBS smiley emoticon.
Brick?
Nick?
Is it John?
It is John. You're correct. John is a fan of the emojis. I don't know if that means him and Mike White bonded very easily, but yeah, that's his penchant on social media.
But what are his thoughts? The emojis?
It was a link to a video, one of the secret confessionals where he talked about. It was actually a really nice confessional last week about how he felt like he was pretty well connected with basically everyone left in the game, which we'll see if that bears fruit come the merch time.
Well, there you go.
All right, next one. Did you guys hear about the guy that got hit in the head with the soda can? ... He's lucky it was a soft drink.
Drink?
Nick?
Is this like a Joe Anglim tweet or something like that?
Nope, not a Joe Anglim tweet. Leon, I'll give you a guess.
Oh, for a split second, I thought I was like, oh, this is like a Rupert bot tweet or something. This seems like, I don't know, is Malcolm an answer? Malcolm always tweets stuff like this.
No, I'm sorry, it was not Malcolm. It was Dan. Dan took a break from his sexy photos to post a dad joke.
Get you a man that can do both.
Look, you and I should be fans of the dad jokes. This is, you know,
yeah, exactly. We're dad.
What's training?
What's a dad to be joke though? Is that a special like bridging joke that we can get behind?
You have to, yeah, whatever it is, but you're doing it sopping wet. So it's kind of like halfway between being young, carefree bachelor and halfway between, you know, like lame and uncool dad.
Yeah, daddies are fully wet, but daddies to be are just moist. We feel very uncomfortable. All right, let's move on here to our next one. We all deserve pancakes and morning sex, shrug emoji.
Oh, my.
Great. Nick?
Surely that's Dan.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm also pretty sure these tweets were one right after the other. So dude is expanding his brand.
He is trying to get so much, like so many chicks from this, and he's putting in the effort, and you know, good on him, because it's a full-time job trying to keep up with, you know, your social media presence. And if that's what's important to him, then well done.
I like that he's really casting a wide net, though. Like, he's like, I'm going to get all types of women.
I fear what happens if Dan makes it to the day 39 breakfast and what he will expect of the people that he's with.
Uh-oh.
Well, we got one. Shrug emoji.
Talk about the most homoerotic thing you've seen on Survivor, Mike.
All right, let's move on here. Just watch 13 Hours again with my kids. No explanation needed.
Break.
Nick?
Does John have kids? John?
Nope, that is incorrect. Liana?
Terry Dietz?
That is correct.
I was like, who's got kids? Oh, Terry Dietz has kids.
I don't know what 13 Hours is. Is that like a take on 127 Hours? Oh, no, it's the John Krasinski 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
Right.
I did not see that. So,
well, next time Terry comes on RHAP,
I only watched the Real Housewives of Benghazi. I don't watch the
which is also a 13-hour season. But
all right, let's move on here. This is a bit of a long one. It's incredible just how much people take for granted in life. Acknowledge and support everyone who helps you get to where you want to be, and extend a hand or two while you're at it. We all could all use a little more positivity and integrity in the world. Have an awesome week, guys.
Break.
Nick?
Joe Anglim.
I'm sorry, not Joe Anglim. Liana?
Dan!
That is correct!
Yes!
Is Dan the answer to every
Dan was Dan. We did plunder a lot of Dan booty for this quiz.
Liana's gonna, when we finish this, Liana's gonna go and plunder herself a lot of Dan booty by following him on Twitter.
You know me all too well, Nick.
All right, let's move on here. Only two questions left, and we're tied up right now. So even after I applied for Survivor, got flown out for interviews, went through months of medical and psychological tests, and finally was told I made it, after 18 years of dreaming...
Break.
Nick?
Christian?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. Christian had a nice, fun little, like, 11-tweet thread going on after the cast was released, or when it was the season premiered, about his sort of anxieties, and he talked about 18 years of dreaming. I still worried, can I really go through with this? Which we saw partially sort of fleshed out when he finally got his big emotional scene this week.
I'm shocked it wasn't Dan wishing for 18 years to play Survivor.
For 18 years, I've wanted pancakes in the morning, and I want to do it sopping wet by my calendar.
Covered in syrup. All right. Final tweet here. Liana, you need to get this right to tie it up.
Ooh, okay.
Cake veins.
Brawna.
Yes.
John.
That is correct.
What?
I have no idea what that means. What does
cake
that mean?
Cake veins.
So I believe his new wife had a birthday party, and one shot was of these wrestlers like holding cake, and their veins were so promulent that he had to tweet cake veins with about 6 exclamation points.
Oh my god. That is the... Do you have a tiebreaker round that does not involve cake veins?
Okay, wait. So first of all, I googled cake veins because I was curious, and the top response for me on Google was from a website called Cake Central. It's a forum for making cakes, and somebody posted, help, Venus on or veins on penis cake, how to do them realistic.
Is that written by Daniel underscore Rengering?
Yeah. Veins on a penis cake.
Oh, that's so funny.
And people responded with answers, so.
And how do you make veins in a penis cake for everyone out there that wants to know?
What? Okay, somebody was like, put thin ropes of fondant.
I was going to say fondant, yeah.
Yeah, or make sure your RKT is as smooth as possible. Pack hard. I don't know what any of that means.
RKT? Oh, boy.
I stumbled into a small subculture I might not be interested in.
Yeah, RKT, what's coming up for me is an airport, so I don't know if that's what they're referring to.
I don't think that's right.
All right, I'll bring up a random tiebreaker here. All right, I want you to each write down your answers closest without going over wins. How many followers does @DanielRengering on Twitter have?
Oh, God.
Let's remember, this is the guy who became social media famous with being the hot cop, and he's trying to expand on his brand no matter what the, you know, whatever messaging is there. Each write down your answers. Let me know when you're done.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
All right, Liana, what did you say? How many followers do you think Dan has?
I said 40,000.
Nick?
No way. No way. What? I think he wishes he had 40,000. I reckon he's got like 5,000.
So you were both over, but Nick was much closer. Dan has 3,930 followers.
What? Wait, but I thought he got famous for Hot Cop.
They did not translate into the Survivor game, apparently. It was a flash in the pan, much like the pancakes.
Oh.
I think the word famous, like, I think he uses that very liberally.
Famous with air quotes.
I tried to Google the picture, the Hot Cop picture, and like I couldn't find it. Does anyone know exactly what does anyone seen it? Like, have you seen the picture?
Yeah, I remember. Well, I remember when the picture came out. It's like them. He's like looking up at the camera. It's like a bunch of guys. He's like kind of on the like, not that this is helping anyway, me describing a picture you've never seen. Oh, and Dan's in the picture. I don't know if you know this. But
yeah, there are some cars. There's a building behind them, you know.
Yeah, you know, like a SWAT team kind of deal.
Okay.
So congratulations, Nick. You have known the most about the Brochachos, even begrudgingly for one of them. I think this makes you an honorary Brochacho. Please accept this offering of spoon-fed pancakes from Dan.
It would be my play. Only if we are dripping wet when we do it.
Absolutely.
With cake veins.
Oh, you just sent me the picture. Is that the picture?
Yeah.
He's like cut off in half of it. He's not even the main guy.
That's true. Well, you know, it's sort of like how, you know, I don't know if it's sort of like in Dreamgirls when, you know, they point out like Effie was the main girl. But then they said, no, you know what? This girl, Beyonce's character, she's the one that's really going to become the star. Like, that's sort of what happened to the other two. Sort of got Michelle Williams and Kelly Rowland out of the Hot Cops.
That's so sad. I wonder what they're up to now.
Probably putting out their
Yeah, wow.
One of them appeared on Redneck Island. The other one's on like Ink Master. Like they went out to do their own reality shows.
Yeah.
I can't believe that. Yeah, that's really underwhelming. Like there needs to be far more pancakes and a lot more sopping wet.
They were in a hurricane, so I'm surprising they were not that wet. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all dry. What is this?
Yeah. Well done, Dan. Well done for getting to fourth. What was it? 4,000.
Yeah, nearly. He might, depending on how much people are interested in the wide swath he does with his tweets, whether you like dad jokes or talking about morning sex, at Daniel Rengering is your place to go. So we'll see if we can bump up to 4,000 by the next time we come on here. I have a question.
Hopefully he gets to 40,000.
So I have a question segueing back to the episode proper, because I was so interested by the strategy that Mike really vocalized from the Jebeni perspective, where his personal battle was, okay, the decision that I make, how was this going to come across to the other Goliaths? He said in a confessional that, you know, he felt the yard-long stares of John and of Alec and the others, you know, when he came into the reward challenge, so he thought maybe I should stick with Angelina. And I think there might be sort of a stigma out there about people saying, oh, the merge is coming up. I want to make sure, you know, I don't get people mad at me. But I guess my question is that valid? Because, you know, I looked a bit into some historical precedents as to, you know, in the past Survivor seasons, when have there been, you know, post-swap, but still pre-merge votes that really have substantially affected people on the other tribe and made them think about things differently? And honestly, I could only think about a couple of instances. And I don't know, you guys can maybe fill me in on a couple that I'm missing, but like the two that I'm really thinking about are Marcus from Survivor Gabon, which, you know, elicited the gift heard around the world, but also firmly told those on that Onion Alliance, like, hey, these people don't want to work with you. And the other one going all the way back to Survivor Marquesas, when he wasn't the last pre-merge boot, but when Gabe went home, I know that really substantially affected Pascal and Nalia and Kathy, and that's what sort of got them a bit separated from the road to four. So I guess I'll throw out the question, especially since, Nick, you have experienced this firsthand, you know, when you come into the merge and you see someone like Phoebe is being voted out. Do we think that there really is an impression that's made from, you know, watching the other tribe come in and seeing the particular person that was voted out the night before, right before you get to the merge?
It's funny. I was thinking about this because, you know, and I think that Robin Stevens spoke about on the Know-It-Alls, that like, you know, are we just cued to make these like, whoa, reactions? But I think we are, but I do think that the bigger thing is not as actually why that person was voted out, but just the rampant speculation. The speculation can just go so wild that you don't want to be at the center of people trying to fit a narrative. Like, for example, when Phoebe was the person who was voted out just before we merged, we all were speculating as to who it was going to be. Now, we merged straight away and it was able to be clarified for us. But had we gone back to camp, we would have had so many aspersions about, oh my God, this happened and that happened and that happened. And then in that crucial couple of hours or that crucial morning before you know you're about to merge and you are setting up everything, you're getting all your ducks in a row. You get your ducks in a row based on what you think is happening at the other tribe. So it can actually be really, really bad for you if people start putting in their plans ready to go based on something that they are assuming. And I feel like they would make a really big assumption on, okay, if Angelina is gone, this is one plan, and if Lyris is gone, this is the other. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, it definitely makes sense. I guess I was thinking from Mike's perspective, and I know that we have, you know, more information than potentially any of the players, but it felt like, why did Mike want to stay Jabini or Goliath strong? Because it felt to me like he was on the outs. So I was like, I didn't quite understand why he wanted to keep that majority together anyway. I almost felt like, cut to the Davids, then stick with the Davids, then you can flip back. And I don't know. I felt like there would be more of a road, but obviously he made connections that we didn't get to see for him to want to stay Goliath strong.
Right. Well, because I know when I talked with Natalia about this in my exit interview with her, she pretty much refuted the idea that the six was actually a thing. She'd said that like the three girls had definitely talked and they sort of each brought in their own spokes of the wheel. But that wheel very rarely spun, especially when they only went to one vote. So I totally do buy into the fact that I think Mike has made a lot of personal connections that might be another reason that he was totally fine getting rid of Natalie, because he wasn't really that close with Natalie. Him and Natalie definitely had a bad beef, especially after she was the one to push Jeremy to go. And so I think otherwise, maybe he was just a little hesitant to really, you know, pull the trigger and get rid of another Goliath. Like, he was fine getting rid of one stray, but now he has his quote unquote core group that he wants to go all in on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess if he wants to set up sort of, Nick, to what you're talking about, like if he wants to stay Goliath strong, like if that's what he wants to go with, then sending that signal that that's what he's cool with, then hopefully, you know, that'll send a sign to the others, even though I think that majority of them could probably agree like, oh, yeah, we understand why he got rid of Natalie. Like, she was annoying, abrasive, whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting rid of Angelina doesn't have that same, not that same feeling associated with it.
So I know that we approach this from the Mike perspective, but I guess let's sort of flip things around and talk about it from the Nick perspective, because what Mike feared, Nick is going to have to face, right? I mean, I guess he could sort of slide by with the excuse of like, I didn't want to draw rocks, but still, he voted out a David when the numbers were 7-7. Do we think there's going to be any real consequence? You know, it's only happened a couple times in the past, despite this abject fear. But do you think there's a chance that Nick could have some Davids coming down on him for voting out Lyrsa?
Yeah, I really don't think in this era of Survivor the you know, original tribe formations really matter too much. Like, I think that they matter on the surface, but I feel like in a couple of votes' time, it definitely won't matter. Like, I feel like it might do enough to get you in hot water for that first one or two votes of the merge. But like, I wouldn't be too fussed, especially when there are three tribes and they've been in three tribes for, you know, a few votes now, that there's been enough time to make bonds, you know, three different groups of bonds. And I just don't see it sticking together along David Goliath lines. I really don't. And I don't think that they would be as well. Did they see Ghost Island?
They saw like 4 or 5 episodes, maybe.
Okay. So they didn't really see the whole Navidi Strong thing actually kind of like, you know, being a storyline. And in Modern Survivor, has it really been too much of the original tribes sticking together? So I wouldn't be too fussed if I was them. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that with all of the sort of all of the tribe divisions, but because you also had Pat and B leave the game, I know that they're losing some time because of the storms and stuff, but I feel like it's happening really quickly. And the number of actual votes, because they've only voted out, what, five yep. people? So I don't know. I almost feel like it's accelerated too. So you don't even, you have less time almost to build bonds. So I think it's going to be really fluid when we get to the merge. And I think we're going to see these smaller pockets. That's what's really going to drive the voting. Once we get to the merge, I think any larger block, there's too many fractures. I don't think it's going to happen.
So you think this is going to be a very voting block every season, or voting brick?
brick. Voting bro Anna, thank you very much. I think so. I think I can't wait for this next episode just to see how all the groups sort of start to come together. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and everyone's been to a tribal council, which is a rarity, I feel like, in modern seasons of Survivor. So we might not get like the Jessica Johnston or the Chris Noble voted out of their first tribal council where they didn't really get a lay of the land. Everyone sort of has been around the block at least once. So it'll be interesting. I think this group especially is going to step up a lot of things. They're not afraid to make the gameplay more kinetic, even early on when there's big groups of people. So that makes me hopeful that the post-merge is just going to be as fun and fancy-free as the pre-merge.
Fun and fancy-free. Okay. Speaking of fun and fancy-free, I have the honor to be here with two expecting fathers. And we have to play some sort of baby shower game. And I started by Googling baby shower games, and they're all super weird. I do not want to play any baby shower games.
Can you describe what they are?
Okay, well, have either of you had it? Did you? Well, I guess, Mike, you're less far along. Like, yeah. Angela's less far along.
Do not have a zygote shower yet, no.
Yeah. Isn't your baby due Christmas or something?
Yes. So my wife is actually out now, like, with her mum, just looking for decorations and stuff for the baby shower. She didn't want to have one. She hates things like that. She hates games, like, for baby shower games or bridal shower games. So we kind of like strong-armed her into actually having a baby shower, but there will definitely be no games at it. But I know of a bunch of games because, you know, just from what my sisters have told me or what Christine has said, but the ones where they smear different foods into nappies and yes. then people have to sniff the nappy and then figure out, you know, it's peanut butter, it's curry. And it's just like, why yes. would you, like, welcome to my party, sniff this nappy. Like,
yes. Oh my God. It's called, okay, this is a game because I Googled baby shower games. Okay, so this one is called Dirty Diapers. And it's exactly like you're describing.
Yes.
Okay, you take like melted chocolate candies or milky, creamy, nutty stuff. Yeah, and you like put it in the diaper and you're supposed to pass around the diaper, have each person snick and lick the gooey poo center. So I was like, no.
No, you're done. I don't want the term gooey poo center out in the universe now.
I know. Oh my God. There was another one. It's called Guess the Mother's Measurements. And I was like, unacceptable.
That is wrong. Oh my God. So many levels.
And guess the father's measurements.
Yeah. Talk about sympathy weight. Yeah. So we're not doing that.
Okay, good. There's also one where you like, where if it's like a bridal, like a co-ed bridal shower, where you fill up like little, like, dummies with like beer, and then the dads have to like chug through a dummy, like through a bottle. It's just so dumb.
Oh man. Okay, well, maybe when we have one in person someday. However, we will not be doing any of that. I decided instead to create a baby name game because I want to be constructive and help you both pick maybe middle names for your children.
I'm glad you went conservative and said middle, not first.
Yeah, well, I figured that was going to be a really long shot. This maybe, I think actually this is part of the contract, Nick, by agreeing to come on the B&B, you actually have forfeit the middle name of your child. Well, you have to name it one of
the names. Really, we're really the Rumpelstiltskin of RHAP podcast.
That's totally fine because like on my podcast this year, there has been so much discussion of what's going to be this baby's name. And the winner of the Dansey apparently got the right to name the baby What was the other thing they got to do? Like, you know, be the baby's godfather, or I don't know. There was like, I basically, who knew that being a podcaster, you'd be signing over so many rights to your offspring.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it continues here today. So, but Mike, you're also obviously, I mean, I just assumed that I would get to name the baby because as your co-host, but I'll settle for this instead.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We might do a middle first hybrid, like Mary-Kate.
Well, speaking of that, what I've done is I've actually created portmanteaus of two first names of Survivor 37 contestants. So, and these are the names, Nick and Mike, that you can pick from. So the way this game is going to work is I will list the name and then you'll buzz in. So, Nick, if you want to stick with Brick, that's allowed. If you want to pick something else, you're more than welcome to.
I definitely want to stick with Brick.
Okay. Stick with Brick. That sounds like a really terrible campaign slogan.
Yeah. But when Brick from Anchorman decides to run for office.
Well, that's going to be, Nick, when you run against Christian for Comptroller of Slamtown, you got to say stick with Brick.
Okay. Can you explain to me what a comptroller is? Because that is definitely not a thing in Australia.
It's like an accountant.
Oh, wait, I thought it was something way much way cooler than that. Like, I am comptroller. Like, you will bow down to me. Like,
no, ironically enough, even though Christian's running for it, it has nothing to do with robots. A comptroller is a controller used in financial matters.
It does sound like RoboCop, though. That's what I thought.
Way more boring than I thought it would be. Okay, cool.
Okay, so I'll give an example. So for example, I might say the name Cat, and then one of you would buzz in, and that is a portmanteau of Kara and Pat. Although for some of them, there are multiple names. So like I also would have accepted Carl and Pat or Christian and Pat, Cat. So it's up for debate. Okay, so are you both ready to play the game?
Wait, Mike, what's your buzzer?
Brike. should I just stay with the theming here?
I think it's perfect. That works for me. Okay. All right. So your first name is Mimi. Mimi. That's a great start. Mimi. If I just.
Oh my God.
Brike?
This Brick. Is-
okay, I think I actually heard Mike first.
I'll say Mike and B.
Okay, I will accept that. Also, Mike and No, I won't accept that. What am I talking about? It's Mike and Jeremy. Oh no!
Wait. You came away your own.
Okay, wait. All right, that was another practice. That was a practice round.
Okay.
Okay, it's very late. I'm very tired.
I thought it'd been many.
Well, Mimi, because I was trying to make them normal names because I care about you guys and I didn't want your baby to have a weird name.
Mimi's really cute.
Yeah. Plus, whenever you look at your child, you can think of Mike White and Jeremy. And I think that that's what everybody wants to think about when they look at their offspring. Okay. All right. Let's move on to our next one. Dan. Dan. G-A-N.
Dan. Isn't that?
Break.
Yeah, Mike.
Gabby and Dan?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Dan. Like take
I'm
a,
sorry, I'm not
like take G A N to like take a GAN at this person.
G. Oh my God.
Yes, I also thought that Liana just said Dan and I got very confused.
Oh my God, for my example, I was gonna say, so you could have the name Carl, which is a portmanteau of Carl and Christian.
What is this?
Look, I've been at a conference the past 2 days. My brain is so shot. And I wrote these during talks. So
I was like, am I not hearing?
Yeah. It's actually, no, that's a portmanteau of Davey and Dan. I'm sorry, you're both wrong.
Yes.
Okay. All right. This one hopefully will be a little bit more clear. Okay. Birsa.
Nick, Brick.
Yes, Nick.
Lyrsa and B.
Yes, that is correct.
I would love to call my kid Birsa. And if he grew up to be like some sort of alcoholic, I'd be really disappointed.
I don't know. I mean, it's a little on the nose for the kid to be like, my name is Birsa, so I turn to the bottle. You are what your name is.
My name's Birsa. I only drink hard alcohol.
Yeah, I said, screw you, Dad. I'm not a beer.
Yeah,
I'm a kid.
Oh, why no? Okay. All right. Your next name is Lick. Lick.
Nick.
Yeah, Nick.
Lyrsa and Nick.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, that Lick. Could have been Nick's alliance name for him and Lyrsa.
I know. Lick. Oh, these are also could be couple names, so I would accept that as well.
R.I.P. Lick.
P. Lick. Okay. Carby.
Nick. Brick.
Yeah, Nick.
Carl and Gabby.
Yes, that is correct. I also would have accepted Cara and Gabby. Okay. I'm going to really enunciate on this one. Jurl.
My break.
Yeah, Mike.
I'm going to say Jeremy and Carl.
Yes, that is correct.
Jurl.
I like that name.
I just feel like if we use Carby and then we add B's name to that as well, Carby B, isn't that like the rapper Carby B?
Yeah, Cardi B, but like Carby B. It's like the knockoff that you buy at the dollar store
yeah. version of Cardi B. You're coming to the stage, Carby B. Her legs are going to, where her knees are going to do this time.
And she can stay at the car B&B. That's car. Great.
Aww. Perfect. Okay. So it is 3-2. Nick is currently winning. And our next name is...
Okay. All right.
No one knows.
Yeah, you recovered from your GAN mishap. From GANgate.
Hashtag GANgate. Okay. Here's another one. Let me enunciate on this one too. Gassica.
Gassica. Jessica. Wait, that's what that girl's name was, wasn't it? The girl. Yes. Gabby and Jessica.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Next name, Dabby.
Mike.
Nick, break.
Mike, I heard Mike.
I can go with multiple options here, but I'll say Davy and Gabby.
Yes, I also would accept it, Dan and Gabby. So I feel like, Gabby was fun.
Yeah, Davy and Gabby would be that's why I picked the two of them. They'd be a very interesting mixture. He is a loose cannon, and she is sort of there to pick up the pieces.
Is this a couple or like a weird cop show? Loose cannon and the straight edge partner there to pick up the pieces.
Yeah, it actually does sound like a good pairing.
Dabby. Okay. All right, your next name is Meth.
Oh, boy.
What? Oh, Nick.
Yeah, Nick.
Mike and Elizabeth.
Yes, that's correct.
Meth.
All right, I think we found it. The perfect name for my child. Stop it right there.
Hooray!
Or you could do Lick Meth together.
Lick Meth Bloom. Come into the world.
It's beautiful. Oh, if that's not your child's name, then I've failed you as a podcast partner. Okay, well, we have one more name. Now, Nick, you have won this game. Mike, I'm sorry. It's impossible for you to catch
up. I was the
up.
True winner because I found a name for my unborn child. Thank you very much.
Yes, you did. Lick Meth.
I can't wait till one day he meets... Beersa.
Carby Beersa.
please invite me to the wedding of Lick Meth Bloom and Carby Beersa Iodanza.
Oh, that is so good.
That's so cute. Okay, well, don't count your eggs before they get bacteria, because I have one more name that you might want to use. Okay. Your final name is Jizabeth.
Oh, God. Blank.
Yes, Mike.
I'll say John and Elizabeth.
Yeah, I also had accepted Jeremy and Elizabeth.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so this is one of those ones where I'm like sitting there in the talk of this guy who's like so well renowned. I mean, he's like won so many awards, amazing scientist. And I'm like, Jizabeth. Like a potential Nobel Prize winning like scientist is giving a talk, and I'm just like, Meth, Jizabeth. So,
oh my God, that was so good. What about Jizameth?
Jizameth.
Jizameth Beersa. Jizameth Beersa sounds like, I don't know, like an antebellum Southern name. Like you can imagine a colonel coming home like, "Where's my dear wife, Jizabeth Beersa?"
That's perfect. Okay, great. Well, if you ever, you know, get in a time machine and go back a couple hundred years, you can name your kid Jizabeth Birsa.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, gotta treat McGang Green that I got in Antietam, Jizabeth.
I want to thank you for coming up with those because, you know, Christine and I have had a bit of trouble trying to come up with a name, you know, despite all the help with the podcast. But one of the things that we said, because, you know, people keep suggesting Fenella as the person who was on Survivor. And I absolutely love the name Fenella, but we kind of made a rule like, no one that's any noteworthy survivors, or no one that has any survivors. And so we've chosen a girl's name, and then we realized that it actually is a survivor that has this name, but complete not noteworthy. So I feel like when it, you know, if we have a girl and it's announced that, you know, we're having this girl and we put the name out there, people are going to be like, you said that it wouldn't be a survivor. How dare you forget the blah, blah, you know, third boot from, you know, whatever. I can't tell you. But, you know, like I feel like now I can completely move away from that and say, honey, we don't need to use that any name anymore. We've got a whole nother, you know, a set here that we can choose from. So thank you.
You're welcome.
May I show you meth?
No one on the internet will be mad if we name our kid Gandrel.
Sounds like a character from Rural Jer.
The Ruger Gandrel.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Well, that's all I got. Well, congratulations, Nick. Both a baby name and a win at the B&B.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. So I was actually thinking about this other idea that I had. I couldn't figure out how to make it into a game, but I wanted to ask it as my discussion question for the week. So I love Christian's tutorial on spear fishing.
Yes.
Because I love that he brought science into it. He was like, you have the potential energy and then kinetic energy, i.e. stabbing. And I just thought it was so fun to hear him talk about fishing. I think he's got a real career. If he wants to start a YouTube channel, he could teach so many different things. So what would you want Christian to teach you? Because I think he'd be a great teacher.
This is what I was thinking. This is going to be my discussion question. How can we get, what other like everyday survivor activities can we get Christian to narrate in a highly scientific manner? This is exactly it, Liana. We're just, you know, we're right there. We both love the name Elizabeth, Jizabeth, and you know, this is, we're right in the pocket.
Right on it. Yeah. So it could be, I was thinking survivor things. I could also, I was thinking like, I think it'd be fun to watch him explain bowling. I for some reason, I don't know why that popped into my head. Maybe because there's definitely physics involved, but also it's bowling. There's something humorous about Christian teaching me bowling.
Well, the thing about bowling,
you're the scientist. So like, was he correct in his discussion of how to use a spear?
Yeah, I mean, the potential energy, kinetic energy, potential energy, I mean, it was definitely correct. I don't know if anybody in the physics field would call kinetic energy stabbing, but that is certainly in this example how it came out.
Yeah, you know, potential energy is when a roller coaster goes up the hill. Kinetic energy is when the roller coaster stabs into the rest of the amusement park.
Right. Or it's like, yeah, potential energy is when you swing the bowling ball back behind you, and kinetic energy is when you slam it into your leg because you don't have the control to just like throw it forward.
Because you're wearing flippers.
Yes.
You're wearing
walking
flippers
backwards.
Right. I'll give a shout out to Antonio Mazzaro, who a while back said that Christian was basically a human TED Talk. And so this is basically what we're getting firsthand. I would like to see Christian describe the voting process. He could be like, when you walk, which is a form of movement, then you uncap the pen, and due to gravity and the sense of ink coming out of the pen, the ink makes its way onto the paper, and the sense of permanence makes sure that the vote is written down in full.
I love this weird Christian / William Shatner impression.
It makes more sense when you channel it.
Yeah,
I'm also doing robot arms. Mike. So.
Mike, I'm sorry. That was so good. We all need to acknowledge how good your Christian is.
Thank you.
Oh, he also said something Christian said. He was just like, I'm a cool guy. And for some reason, that SNL skit with Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd, like two wild and crazy guys, like that just popped into my head. And so that's what I was picturing also. It was a very confusing moment for me.
So you'll wear that to go to the club, and then that's when you start pulling out the magic. That's where the true misdirection lies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, so DJ LaBelle Klein messaged me and had some other ideas that were very similar, because he was thinking we could create a whole series like this. Like, for example, you could have Matt from the Amazon teach you how to sharpen a knife, or like Gillian could teach you animal tracking.
I like Matt sharpening the knife. Like, all right, just get a nice blade and get a nice stone and we'll just keep going. We'll keep going. Never sharpen like
the animal dung. Just gotta take animal dung.
I would like to see Jan teach us how to bury a dead bat. Like, you know, how, what's the best way to kind of give, you know, a random animal a burial, a proper send off?
Yeah, create your whole pet cemetery.
I can see this like a Survivor Tutorials YouTube channel where it's like, hi, I'm James. I'm gonna teach you how to dig a hole.
Well, that's with James and Russell, actually. And this is like our TEDx talk version, like a Survivor TEDx talk.
So good.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we'll keep thinking. I just think this is an idea that really could evolve into something. Let's market it. Let's market it.
My favorite line when he was doing it was like when he was talking about the flippers and he was like, every step was a blow to my self-worth.
just the personal ego agony.
Yeah. Well, although it was nice to see, he talked about like him becoming a Goliath. And I was like, okay, well, that's allowed according to Jeff Probst. Like, that is the one you can go from a David to a Goliath, not backwards. Yeah. So at least Christian was in the right there.
Yeah. Though I think in order to become a Goliath, don't you have to be kind of a weird guy who likes to eat ghost peppers like Dan did? Dan's like, oh man, I'm starving. Hey, look, a small pepper. Let me bet you a kid eat it.
Oh, this is nowhere near as good as morning after pancakes.
Where's Kara?
Oh boy. Well, let's move on here. I'll put a cap on that. Maybe we'll come up with some more TEDx talks to tout out my Christian impression some more over the course of the rest of the season. Let's move
big
on.
TEDx talks. Big TEDx talks.
I'm 150 to 200% satisfied with those talks. Let's move on to the final segment of each every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. Last week's question of the week, in honor of the Napalm Natalie boot, we were deprived. We only had two voting confessionals where she decided to mock someone's fashion choices while simultaneously build them up. I think someone put it really nicely on the feedback show last week when they said it was a compliment open face sandwich where there's no, like, it's a compliment and an insult. So we gave it to you guys to create a Natalie-esque voting confessional that discusses a previous contestant's style choices. As usual, we'll go through some of the answers that you, the listeners, gave, and then we'll give each of our answers. Let's start with Drew Pertoldi. Stephanie Johnson, your leggings are glowing, darling. Like, actually glowing. They are hurting my eyes.
Was she that pale?
I mean, maybe just because it was the...
Not her legs, her leggings. Yeah, her leggings.
The fluorescent.
Oh, her leggings. I totally read that wrong. I was like, you should have chosen Patrick Bolton if you're going to pick something pale.
Or Cochran.
All right. Yeah, or Cochran. Yeah, exactly.
Tan has a couple here. First, he says to Savage, congrats on making it to the jury, darling, which is short but sweet, but like a nice, she would say that to Andrew Savage.
Yeah, I like it.
your beanie is nice reservoir in your beanie.
And then she also said she actually had one for Angelina. Should she get her revenge? Feel that burning sensation? That's the Natalie napalm. Hope that keeps you warm at night. Stay chill, girl.
Very good.
I like it.
Jonathan Troyer says, I hope this move is as big as your shirt, GC. See you later.
Oh, I thought it was GC you later. Like, it was also GC.
Oh, yeah, I think it was. We should give Jonathan credit there. He did write GC you later. So it's multiple folds of jokes.
GCC you later.
Yeah, because for those of you that don't remember, GC from Survivor Gabon walked to the game with a giant lime green polo that was about three sizes too big. Like, he was Tom Hanks at the end of the movie, big.
Yeah, he brought his own tarp in polo shirt form.
Oh, could you imagine?
Today, guys, you'll be competing for a tarp and GC's second shirt.
Well, could you imagine, like, if Angelina existed then, like, I gotta vote out GC, like, get the shirt off his back, literally.
GC.
No, he's paddling away. Shirt? He got, like, when he did before that immunity challenge. let's move on to Parker Schimler, who says, Debbie, The only thing that would make you more fierce and catty would be if you killed that tiger yourself. Let's be honest, you and Coach probably worked together on that one.
Yes, I'm so happy Debbie's bathing suit got brought up. Yes.
And finally, the Melissa bot to Stephen Fishback. Your hair is moldy, your glasses are poopy, and your pants are also poopy. I like your intestine. I mean, severe gastrointestinal distress.
Darling.
Darling. Poopy glasses,
yeah, it
darling.
Needs like it, yeah, it needs like a, at the end, it needs like some sort of like little, you know, yeah, what's it called? Like a little honey or a darling or
sweetie,
a babe or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the one that I came up with was a Rupert, your tie dye is to die for, honey. And then just like slam the paper down into that thing, do a bit of a click in a Z formation, and then you sashay yourself way back down to the stool.
Or snap in an N formation.
For Natalie. Okay, so mine, so Natalie said in her confessional for, or her voting confessional for Jeremy was get off my island. So obviously I wrote one for Troyzan. Get off my island. By the way, your green monster is gorgeous, darling.
Natalie.
Natalie. And then apparently because I was, I guess, on a Game Changers kick, I also wrote one for Brad Culpepper. Take your decorative hanging balls back to Florida. I like your burlap sack dress, though.
No, what about we can see your decorative hanging balls from beneath your burlap sack?
Get rid of the sack. We can see your other sack.
I love it.
I came up with one for Jonathan Penner. It says, take your whack-ass fruitcake fedorka and get yourself a new knee in an alliance that'll take you to the final four. Bye-bye, man. Love your Wilson blue eyes, though.
No. That's what Jeff Probst is going to say to Penner when he's really trying to get his goat during one of the challenges.
Did you guys notice that Angelina, during the slathering of compliments she gave to Nick, she talked about his Wilson blue eyes?
Yeah.
So because it's Nick Wilson, I assumed it was like,
oh, because Wilson's there's a Wilson's disease.
Did you Google it?
Yes, I've Googled Wilson blue eyes because I was stupid. Wilson's disease involves a mutation of the gene coding, which prevents copper within the liver from entering the Golgi apparatus and cells. Instead, the copper accumulates in the liver and in other tissues, including the iris of the eye.
Yeah, doesn't it like make them yellow, right? Because you have the iron accumulation there or something like that?
Yeah, so basically, in one form, Angelina is referring to his last name. In my version, she's saying he's jaundiced. So pick your poison.
Yeah.
Guys, you realize that this is Christian explaining the comment in scientific terms. This is perfect for the YouTube channel.
You see, when liver, there's an enzyme.
The Golgi apparatus.
Enters it. Think of it like a nice roller coaster effect where the copper makes its way up into your eyes and wow.
It's just it's like it's trapped there, like it's stuck there.
Yeah, I'm realizing that my Christian is combining William Shatner with Jeff Goldblum, and I think that's the perfect combination.
Yeah. Well, at first I thought it was like, it's the Wilson sisters that we all know, musical artists.
Wilson Phillips.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Wilson sisters is part of Wilson Phillips. Obviously, they're known for their eyes. Yes.
That's
obviously
true. Obviously, that's very true. So the question of the week for next week, we're going back actually to the very first episode to round out the pre-merge here. Since we know the contestants pretty well, I want you guys out there to nickname a Survivor contestant Mike White style, which is talking about them through reference of a TV show or a movie, like when Mike referred to Christian as Big Bang Theory. It can be a current player, it can be a past player, but this is a chance for us to put on our Mike White fedoras and take a stab at Robert Downey Jr. style, referring to people by pop culture references only.
This is great. I did this in my first ever confessional. One of the things was, what do you think of the other contestants? And I was talking about Kat, who had arrived in this caftan and had this giant hat. And I was like, we've got the Real Housewives of Samoa here. And they were like, we're not going to be able to play that. I was like, damn it.
It's like you couldn't get the rights to say it.
I don't know. Different channel.
Yeah, you have to be like Carl and like make a reference to a podcast without even realizing it on the episode. And we are super excited to be going over these answers next week. We're bringing on a very special guest for the merge episode of Survivor David versus Goliath, Jessica McKenna. For those of you that don't know Jessica, she's a person who very much frequents the Earwolf podcast, network of podcasts. She hosts a podcast of her own called Off Book, which is an improvised musical podcast. She actually did an episode about Survivor. She also appears commonly on Comedy Bang Bang, Improv for Humans, just a whole slew of things. But she's also a huge Survivor fan in her own right. So we were fortunate enough to book her on the B&B. So she'll be here next week joining Liana and I in all the madness that'll be sure to come from the merge. If you're excited, if you know Jessica and you're excited about her appearance, feel free to tweet at her at Jess R. McKenna, R-M-C-K-E-N-N-A, and let her know how excited you are for her to come on. I certainly am. Aren't you, Liana?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I am super excited. Also, not to change the subject, but Dan Ringering on Facebook has 51,664 people liking his page. So I think I was just off. I was on the wrong social media. He's like the Facebook mom famous.
Okay.
That's a good game. Who's more famous, Hot Cop or Chewbacca Mom?
Yes, the classic game. We can definitely play that with Jessica.
Watch out, Jessica. That's coming your way next week.
So hope you're ready.
Hope you're ready for that one. Well, Nick, thank you so much for taking the time to stop down and talk through with us about, you know, again, it was only, I think your last deep dive for Australian Survivor was only a few weeks ago. So we appreciate you taking a short time off to make your way back to us. Before we end up finishing things off, would you mind giving us your thoughts, because this Australian Survivor pertinent news this week in that they officially announced that the theme for season 4 of Australian Survivor, and we are going back to the well of champions versus contenders next season. I know it's, again, very tangential to American Survivor, but for international listeners that are keen to find out your thoughts, do you have any initial reactions to the announcement of that theme renewal?
Well, first of all, I was excited. I knew that it was coming back, but I was excited that it was coming back. And whatever it is that gets Australian Survivor on air, like I've said this year, I'm more than happy for whatever it is, as long as we get Survivor. And look, everyone was super sketchball on champions versus contenders, and it turned out being a really, really good season, especially in the post merge. So I think that what they've done is they've just gone back to the well so that they can kind of like keep the numbers growing, keep the average viewer interested. I thought that they were going to go for some sort of blue collar, no collar, something like that. But the problem is that Australian Survivor, they want to have two tribes only. They want to have two tribes of 12. So you've really got to try and boil it down just to kind of like the two tribe dynamic. And I think that, look, I would have preferred it to be something else, but I tweeted this out that as long as Jonathan Lapalli is back and they've signed him back on, as long as he's coming back, then they could do like potatoes versus dirty bags of laundry. Like, I do not care. Give me whatever it is. As long as JLP is there, I have faith in the system. I have faith in the show. And I'm just going to reserve judgment until I've seen a few episodes. And I know that people are complaining online, just like they complained about last season. But like, everyone's going to watch it. The fans are going to watch it. It's going to be good. I have faith in my Channel 10 overlords. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's sort of a little bit of a like gut reaction of like, oh no, they're doing that again. But I really, really liked this past season. And so until I'm proven wrong, like I'm going to go into it with an open mind. Yes. You know, of course, there's a lot of concerns. Oh, okay, are they going to be able to, you know, have a good cast? Because I think that that was what was really nice about, you know, some of the champions was that they really were there to play. So I'm reserving judgment until I actually see it. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I agree with you. Anything to keep it on the air. So I'm okay with it. I'm super excited.
Especially because now that we've heard that New Zealand Survivor has been arrested.
Yeah, you want to hold on to that and say, don't leave me. And I also think that, I mean, my hope and my expectation is that they've also taken a look at things that might not have necessarily worked with the format last time, specifically
challenges.
Yeah, the challenges being so physically weighted, literally, and also saving a swap for, you know, two votes before the merge. Even though they didn't mix things up properly at the merge, it could have become a very easy situation where they could have just one group could have just picked off the other. So I'm going to assume that they're going to make things in the pre-merge specifically more chaotic. They might say like the post-merge we can sort of leave untouched because the castaways sort of make their own chaos from that perspective. But I could see if they go with lengths to sort of actively work towards improving that pre-merge phase, I'm personally really excited for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that there's, you know, it was hard. It was a hard slog for the contenders because of the physical aspect, because of the camera time aspect, because of the, you know, the storytelling is told through the people who the audience already kind of knows. And I feel like if they can address that, and if they can find some really dynamic people again, I think that they will do a good job. I feel like what will happen now is, now that they've seen some of these celebrities or more well-known people do well and have a positive or fan reaction, I think that what we'll have this year is a couple of celebrities come out and maybe nominate themselves, you know, and say, hey, I'd like to throw my hat in the ring and, you know, would you have me for the show? And, you know, people do that for I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which is another show that's on here. People do that for Dancing with the Stars. And I feel like it will kind of be the same kind of thing. And if that means that we get people who are keen to get out there and, you know, play the game, then cool. So I'm positive. I'm excited.
All right. So, Nick, to find out your musings about potato sacks versus dirty laundry, anything else around any version of Survivor, how can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, so it's just at Nick Iadanza on Twitter and Instagram. It's the same thing, N-I-C-K-I-A-D-A-N-Z-A. And yeah, that's where you can find out exactly what I've called my baby in a couple of weeks. So yeah, stay tuned for that.
We are waiting on pins and meth needles.
Oh damn it, I was gonna say I'll be waiting with baited meth.
Liana, you and I are too much on the same page. How can people follow you on social media to find out all of your thoughts about the world of reality TV and the world outside?
Yeah, when I go outside, I'll tweet about it. I'm on social media at Liana Boras, LianaBoras. And feel free to send me any other baby names that you think we could include for either Nick or Mike's baby. I will collect them and then, of course, send the finalized binders for you both to choose from.
And I will put that in some melted chocolate in a nappy, and we'll see what we do with that.
Lovely.
And if anyone knows the exact rules of how to play lizard versus vampire versus robot, let us know, because I am super keen.
Yeah, we'll save it for a future iteration when you come back on, Nick. You can always follow me at @AMikeBloomType. Check out the interview I did with Lyrsa for Parade. I mean, her personality shown through is really exciting to get to talk with her about, you know, how she fell actually in relationship with the rock stars. Her thoughts about the beginning of the game, and specifically, you know, she's a very unique personality that comes from a lot of different communities, and her talking about the reception behind that countered really nicely to some of the social media stuff, the backlash that has occurred against her for the past couple weeks. So be sure to check that out. I came out with an interview with David Boreanaz for SEAL Team. I talked about the Big Apple Circus for Parade Magazine as well. I got something for Star Trek coming up next week for Hollywood Reporter. So a bunch of random odds and ends smatterings out there in the universe with my content over the next couple of weeks. But I'm super excited to talk about it and write about it all. So thank you all so, so much for listening. If you want to reach out to us with either, you know, your answer to the question of the week, or if you have a longer term game or a bigger game that you want to give to us, you can always use hashtag RHAPBNB or email RHAPBNB@gmail.com. A special thanks to Paul Osleson, our head writer, Shut Up Tim, for helping to design the Know Your Brochachos game, Scott St. Pierre for editing this behind the scenes, and Will from America for our theme song. We'll be back next week talking with Jessica McKenna about what is sure to be an interesting merge for Survivor David versus Goliath. Nick, thank you so much for coming on. Liana, great work as per usual, and we'll check you all out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.